Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. Today, I'm joined by Kristen Chester of Casa Danu. So welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you, Allison. I'm so excited to be here.
For those listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. As Allison mentioned, I'm Kristen. I'm the founder of Casa Danu. My brand is a womenswear brand that's focused on bold, bright, print-forward clothing, super luxurious but comfortable. So think caftans and kimonos and relaxed matching sets. My goal is really through my clothes to bring joy and life to anyone who wears them.
I love it. And I'm also a big lover of color and print, so I can 100% get behind that. So why is color and joyful clothing such a big focus for Casa Danu?
Yeah, so this comes back to why and how I started it. I have zero background in fashion, zero background in manufacturing. I was actually, and still am part of the time, an HR and management consultant for a big part of my career. That's something I still do. And Casa Danu really came out of a tough and transformational time. In January 2020, I was 6 months pregnant with my son, Rowan, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So it was a big shock and surprise. You know, my mom had had breast cancer. She's been in remission for many years, but my grandmother passed away of breast cancer. My great-grandmother passed away of breast cancer. So I knew it was something that was in the family, and I was very diligent about being preventative. I had had genetic testing. I didn't have any of the genes that tend to be identified with a higher prevalence of breast cancer, but I had actually gone and gotten my, so I was diagnosed when I was 34 years old. I'd gone and gotten my first mammogram the year before. Everything was clear. And the only reason I didn't get a mammogram that year was because I was pregnant. And so all that to say, it was a crazy year. It was also 2020. My son was born in April 2020, yeah. Right during shutdown. I was doing chemo while I was pregnant. I did 4 rounds of chemo. We induced my son 5 weeks early. And 2 weeks after giving birth, I was back on a chemo regimen for about 7 rounds. I took a break for a month and did a double mastectomy and reconstruction and had a number of follow-up surgeries just because there were some complications. So, but it was during this time, you know, I was in bed a lot or at a doctor's office. You know, when you're going through that after having a baby, but kind of putting all of those crazy forces combined, I really felt like I lost a part of myself. And I was at kind of my lowest of my low, like emotionally, physically, mentally. And one day, and I, at that time, I was just wearing this uniform of men's oversized, crappy button downs from Target and these super big fleece sweatpants. And I just passed the mirror one day and I was balding, had rashes everywhere and bloating and all of these other crazy things. And I was obviously postpartum too. And I got a glimpse of myself and I just like didn't recognize myself anymore. It just made me so sad. At that moment, I said, I just want something to make me feel like me again and alive again. I'm a pretty bubbly, vivacious person. I just thought to myself, I can't really escape what's happening. I can't change what's happening to me physically. But you know what? I would love some like really fun, beautiful 1960s psychedelic caftans. I can just lounge around in and float around in and imagine that I'm in Palm Beach or Palm Springs or something while I'm going through this. So I just honestly started to dream that up. And it was something that I sketched. I took a sketching class online from my bed. It really was something that I just joked around about for a long time. I was kind of like this, my escape, if you will, my outlet. It took me about a year until I finally decided to do something with it. Coming back to your original question, the reason that I focus on color and print is because I really want my clothes to help women feel vibrant, feel alive, have fun with their clothes, right? As well as making them feel beautiful and fabulous, because that's really what I needed at that time in that kind of very dark period of my life.
I mean, 2020 was hard for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, but you really went through it, didn't you? I'm glad you were able to find this creative outlet to find those pockets of joy in all of that. I love that it was fashion that gave that to you. So I'm curious, did this whole experience, obviously transformational in many ways, shift your perspective on clothing? Were you the type of person who would go for the bold, colorful, vibrant clothes before? Did it shift your perspective on clothing in general, or was that always in you and you just decided to dive in more during this time?
Yeah, so I would say I was never like I've always liked clothes and liked style, but I was never something that I was something very passionate about. I feel like when I was younger, I was much more willing to take risks, be funkier. I've always been drawn to prints and things that felt and looked unique. That's something that has always been with me, even since I was younger. I remember going to buy a dress for prom or homecoming in high school. I'm from Los Angeles originally. When everybody else was going to the mall, I was heading out to Melrose to go to off the radar shops to find something that nobody else would be wearing. It was something always a part of me, but that I had also lost kind of as I moved into this like big corporate job and was like, okay, I'm getting serious about life and this is what this looks like. I'm tired and exhausted and I don't have time for that anymore. So I do think it was something that was always kind of brewing inside of me, but had almost been tampered down over the past decade. And so I do think that, where I came to, I don't think I would have ever expected that my creative outlet would have been fashion, I guess I would say. I hate shopping. It's one of my
Oh, me
least favorite
too.
things. It doesn't bring me joy. I don't get excited about it. It was surprising to me that I went down the fashion route, but when I reflect upon it, I see this seed that had been sown throughout my life of really loving unique things, things that felt great, but also stood out. And searching for those at different points of my life.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's I can totally relate. I also hate shopping. I feel like working in fashion allows me to do less shopping because then I can just
Yes.
make the clothes and not have to go shopping for them.
Totally. I totally agree.
Too funny. So you started out with this kind of like as your hobby during this 2020, and you said you were kind of working on it for a year before you decided to actually do anything with it. So what was it that made you decide, I'm going to make this a business?
Yeah, so it was kind of another. I feel like the universe was just kind of guiding me, right? When April, May of 2021, I had gone back to work after my medical and maternity leave. And I actually ended up back in the hospital for a week because I had an infection on my right breast from where they had done the reconstruction. And I was there for a week. I remember I went in on, I think, Mother's Day night, and it was like my first Mother's Day. I couldn't work because I was on a new medical leave. I had gone through all the shows, I had read all my books, and I was just by myself in the hospital. I Googled how to start a fashion brand because this had that idea had been kind of, I'd been thinking about it for a year. So I did this big deep dive, started reading blogs, articles, and learning about the process. And I think, Allison, this is how we were originally connected, but I found Shannon Lohr and she had a program, an incubator called Factory 45 for sustainable fashion startups. I started reading her stuff, consuming a lot of the information and trying to get myself educated. And then I just got an email kind of when I got to the hospital saying, hey, our next cohort is starting. The application deadline is tomorrow. And so I just said, excuse my language, F it, let's do it. I submitted my application And once I started that program and that incubator, I don't think I really knew what I was getting myself into. But once I got in there, I said, okay, like I'm doing this. We're going to make this happen. I'm going to launch a collection. And it took me about a year to do that, but I finally did it. And that really was the impetus. I honestly think it was the universe in many ways guiding me through various steps.
So cool. What type of company and business are you wanting to build? Like you
Yeah.
obviously signed up for Factory 45 is like a sustainable fashion focused program. And so, yeah, what were the values kind of behind, oh, I'm going to start this brand. Why did you go the sustainable route? And what aspects or values did you want to bring into this business?
Yeah. So, in terms of the values, probably the most important business book I've ever read, Let Your People Go Surfing by Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia. When I read that book, which is way before I even started thinking about starting my own company, it just really resonated with me how he decided to run his business and how sustainability and ethical and responsibility was weaved throughout everything from how they managed their finances to their HR, the materials they used and how they went about production really shaped me. And I knew when I started to think about starting Casa Dono, I knew that it was going to be a no-brainer and a non-negotiable that I needed to start off right in terms of sourcing and production, doing it in the most sustainable and ethical way. That was always going to be a core tenet of anything I did because that book had shaped me so much. I didn't know what I wanted it to be. I knew I was kind of on this journey. I do honestly think this has been part of my healing journey as well, this expression. I just wanted to see if I could launch a brand and then see what happens after that. I think that has shifted over time over the past 2.5 years. I'm really at this point now, and I came into this conversation with you excited to just be very open and honest and transparent of where I am in the process because I've listened to many of your episodes and they've helped me so much as I've gone through it. I feel like I've gone through, okay, let's see if I can do this. Let's see if I can launch a brand. Let's see if I can learn about fashion and manufacturing and get something out there. Now I want to actually build this brand and be able to, I really focused on direct to consumer and focus on a broader audience of women, not just people who have gone through cancer or cancer survivors. And I'm now at the point where I've put out two collections, which we can go into in terms of the challenges I faced. I'm at this next pivot point of, where do I go next? How do I focus the brand? Do I refocus on really supporting the women that I care about? My mission is to help as many women as possible feel as beautiful and alive as they can, especially those women going through cancer. So I'm at this point right now of, do I focus exclusively on that community, or do I keep it broader? I've had visions. I don't want to see Casa Dono in every single store out there. I see it more as a brand. I want women who wear it to love it. I want them to look at that piece in their closet and get excited. I want it to help them feel amazing. And I want it to have this core purpose-driven mission. And so, Allison, I'm not sure you know, but in this second collection, for every garment I sell, I donate one to a cancer patient. That
Yeah,
has
I
really
saw that.
become a driving force for me. So I do think the ethical and sustainable responsibility, as well as this purpose-driven brand, those are two things that have always been important for me and as it's been evolving. And so, long story short, I'm still figuring it out.
No, I love that. I love that answer. There's so much that you just mentioned that I want to ask more about. It really sounds like that book, Let My People Go Surfing, impacted you and started that seedling of thinking about these things even before you started the brand. Then it's really just evolved and blossomed from there. One thing you said was you wanted to start off Right.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot from designers, and it's like they kind of know what it means, and I kind of know what it means. But what did that mean for you when you're saying, I want to start it off right? Was it really the sustainable and ethical piece, or was there kind of more specifics behind what that right was for
Yeah.
you?
I think for me, it was a sustainable and ethical piece. It was something where, I mean, I didn't want to be, and there's obviously nothing wrong with this. This is just choices, right? But for me, it was important. I didn't want to have to get multiple collections in, years down into the business and then say, okay, actually, this is a true value of mine and it is something very important. And I've not paid attention to that because it's easier and less costly. And like the customers in the end, they care, but they don't care that much, right? I'm not saying that's the truth, but there's been a number of research and surveys looking at what are the different buying triggers. To me, it was like, okay, I don't want to have to backtrack. I don't want to have to restart and rethink about this in a new way in a couple of years when I know that this is something that's really important to me. And so for me, it was, how can I do this as sustainably as possible? And how can I make sure that it's done in an ethical way? I've learned a lot on that journey. And I would say, from a sustainability perspective, you probably know this, and your listeners probably know this, but it's like you can never be 100% sustainable. And there are things that I've done that I'm definitely not perfectly sustainable, but I'm trying to do my best and make the right choices for me and the brand. I'm trying to get better continuously over time.
The best mindset to have is you can't do everything 100% sustainably. It's not possible to live 100% sustainably, but having that mindset of this is where I want to go. This is the direction I want to go in. This is the ethics I want to make decisions based on. And then incrementally making the best decision available at that time towards that goal. I think that's a healthy and smart way to go about fitting your values in your business.
Yeah, thank you. Trying over here.
So, with all that, you mentioned it's not the cheapest or easiest way to do things. That's something I wanted to ask you about, the business side and your mission with this latest collection of donating to a cancer survivor every time somebody buys one. Like, there is a cost to that. Your cost is twice as high than for everyone sold. So, how have you made that work on the business side to
This
make that
financial
work for
side.
the business? Yeah, the
Yeah, for
financial
sure.
side to make it work for the business, but also be able to do these things that you care about and spend your money
Yeah.
in those ways to pursue those values.
And I'm going to be totally transparent because I think it's really important. I just listened to your podcast interview with the Shortlist founder, and I appreciated her transparency. I worked on my first collection, the Dolce Vita collection, for a year, and then I launched it using a presale in June of 2022. The pre-sale model worked really well. I was able to make a profit from my labor and materials costs. But if I was looking at covering development costs or all operational costs, that collection did not cover all of those. I then, kind of after that, I started working on a second collection. And that collection actually took me a year and a half to turn around due to serious production challenges. Going a year and a half without having a collection has made it really difficult to create profitability in the business. And so
Did you have inventory from the first collection that you
I didn't.
continued selling for that time?
No, I
No.
didn't have
Okay. You were
inventory.
like totally sold out, year
Totally
and a
sold
half
out.
break.
Year and a half, but at the same time, it was like constantly working on this collection and trying to troubleshoot issues that kept coming up with my fabric and my production partner delays and all of these things. It was just like this snowball effect. And it was so hard from just like mindset perspective to be like, okay, I'm gonna keep going. Should I give up right now? Like, there are many times during that year and a half where I was like, okay, this is just not worth it. I just need to throw in the towel. This is not gonna happen. And, from a marketing perspective, I don't have anything to sell right now, but I need to keep people interested and excited enough. I have no idea when this collection is actually gonna be ready to come out. I almost gave up many times. And, you know, with I finally released, so I started working on the second collection in November 22. I finally released that collection, which is my current collection, in April 2024. With this collection, I'm at a similar point where the sales are covering development and production costs, but I'm not at the point where I'm creating enough profitability to cover all the operational costs of the business. From a standpoint of making the decision of to donate one for every, and you'd be like, you're crazy. You're not even making enough money to cover things and you're deciding to donate things. One might think that, and they might be right. But I went into this, my first collection I produced in Los Angeles. My second collection, I moved production to India using the decision factors of if I ever want to be able to scale, my cost of goods sold is so exorbitant in Los Angeles that it just would not be possible. And if I ever want to go into wholesale, the same holds true. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to find a production partner in India that was focused on sustainable materials and manufacturing processes that had the right ethical credentials. I found out that it was ended up, it's, they're not the right partner for me, as you probably can tell after a year and a half of challenges. The choice I made around the donation model was something I really want to do, test and experiment with. This is so true to who I am and what I want the brand to be about that I'm going to take this collection and I'm going to use this as an experiment and see how it works. And I was able to do that because my costs were so much lower in India than they were in Los Angeles. So for me, it was weighing the option of, I could go for wholesale or I could try this model, which feels really aligned with me. And now it's figuring out, okay, how do I go forward? How do I make this a financially viable and sustainable business?
Yeah, there's so many little decisions that go into that. Thank you for your transparency with all that. I know it's super helpful and validating to hear from other business owners, you know, like people listening, hearing from you, struggling with all these different choices and decisions and what route is best and how do I actually make this financially sustainable long term. So you moved your production from Los Angeles to India to try to get a better cost to scale. What were some of the biggest challenges with that? It sounds like there was a lot of things that you had to work through to get the collection actually to your door and done.
I worked with an amazing woman named Dawn. She has an organization called Masala Threads. And she is basically, she spends half her time in the US, half her time in India. She focuses on helping brands connect with sustainable and ethical producers in India. She helped me kind of through this entire process. And she's been a total angel and has been had my back the entire time and has really, I would have definitely given up if it hadn't been for Dawn. The challenges that happened, I think we were able to manage the communication fairly well. Dawn was incredibly helpful with that. Getting samples back and forth was easier than I thought it was going to be. I think because I did have Dawn who was helping me and she knew the factory very well and had worked with them previously. So I did feel like I had a partner in that process, which was, I think, really, really helpful. I think the challenges started to come in. I had chosen a certain fabric. We had done all of our samples in the fabric. We had done the photo shoot in this particular fabric. We had done pre-production samples. And then when we actually got to production, they started to sew. All of these runs would happen in the fabric. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, maybe it's just this piece of fabric. And then it turned out to be like all of the fabric.
There were runs in the yardage or the needle was pulling threads as it was sewing.
They believed that the particular bulk order of fabric that I got, there was something slightly off about the warp and weft of the weave of the fabric. And so it would look fine where you wouldn't have runs in it as it was laying flat. But as soon as you started sewing, like runs would appear. They tried a bunch of different construction techniques. We tried the same fabric, but with like a slightly different like weave. We tried a bunch of things. And that really took up, I would say, 4 to 5 months. I think what was hard was that the factory and the production facility had kept that information from us. It was a real lack of transparency. And that continued to happen over time. Mistakes would be made and we wouldn't find out until much later. Can happen and occur, especially when you're working overseas and you're not there and you're not managing everything directly. So that was kind of one of the biggest kind of first challenges. We ended up deciding we have to go with another fabric. I chose a totally different fabric. And then we had to reprint everything, retest everything, you know, kind of go through that process. And there were just a number. I think the lack of transparency, ownership, and communication were probably the biggest challenges. I think we probably could have dealt with, okay, this fabric is faulty. Let's figure out the next move, right? In a much quicker fashion, if there had been greater transparency, ownership, and communication.
Yeah, communication, I feel like, is one of the biggest things that I look for. You know,
Totally.
obviously quality is one of them too, but like communication, even if
Absolutely.
they're the best factory in the world, if you can't communicate effectively with them, it's really hard to get anything done. So what did you end up doing to resolve all that? Get your,
Yeah.
obviously the collection came, so were there enough of the pieces that were okay?
So what we ended up doing is we ended up kind of splitting up the deliveries so that I could get some inventory in, start selling. Allison, I'm still waiting on like the final last part of my inventory.
Oh,
And
wow.
like originally it was supposed to be delivered in January, and then it was February, and then it was March. I finally got it kind of at the end of March, the first delivery. I launched the collection on April 17th, with my kind of limited inventory. And then, you know, over time would get more shipments of inventory as things were ready. But, you know, one of the other things that happened was, you know, they basically, because the smaller deliveries were, smaller batches, I would just get put to the bottom of their queue. And even though my whole order was a decent size, when it became broken up, it was like, okay, now we're going to prioritize a much larger order because this like second delivery is only 80 pieces or whatever it might be. And so that also created a lot of delay in the process, is just kind of constantly being shuffled to the bottom of the queue, which was definitely challenging. But I've now had a good amount of inventory. I have my last batch showing up hopefully in a couple weeks. So but it has absolutely been a journey, and lessons that I have learned so incredibly hard. And things that I now know, you know, I'm now contemplating, okay, where do I move next? How do I begin to kind of develop a next collection? And something that I have told myself is, you know, I think I probably need to take a short pause in terms of, I'm not going to put out a new collection, and obviously I have to find a new production partner, but I want to take my time, really take my time finding that production partner, really building the relationship, really like now knowing what to look for. And, you know, I think that's scary because you feel this pressure to be like, okay, I've got to work on the next thing. I got to get the next collection out. I got to be thinking about next year, especially after I've been delayed so long. I feel like I have this catch up to do. But, I'm trying to remind myself that's all on my own timetable, that I'm putting that pressure on myself.
Yeah, I mean, with slow fashion, and I know like you would consider Casadano to be slow fashion, right? There isn't like fashion in general, I feel like, is very much like you gotta have the next collection every few weeks, or you know, certainly 4 times a year, 5 times a year, or you know, every month, whatever the schedule is. But with slow fashion, it's like, no, let's be mindful and intentional with the decisions. Let's go with the pace that works, to get the quality and the fit and the, you know, and you know, aligned with the values. And we release new product when it's ready, you know?
Absolutely, totally. And it's just, I think when you're in it and you're feeling the pressure because you're looking at the numbers and you're looking at, okay, I'm putting all this time and investment into it and I want this to work. And it's, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners can, feel this as well. Like sales is really, sales and marketing can be really, really hard and really tough. And you're constantly trying to think about, okay, how much more do I invest in this until I get a, be able to get a return and weighing those decisions. And it's, but you're so right. It's coming back to like, I did not start this brand so that I could be doing wholesale and putting out, 10 collections a year. And, as I mentioned, being in stores across the country, like I came out, this is a, for me, this is a purpose-led brand, that is focused on doing things like the right way for me and for the brand. And so when it will come, I suppose.
I was just thinking about this the other day. I feel like there is a, it's the middle part of a brand that gets di like it gets more difficult before it gets easier. Where like when you very first start out, or for makers who it's like, okay, maybe I'm gonna make a few samples myself, that seems like, oh, this isn't too bad, right? And at such a small scale. But then when you get into, your first production run, your first few collections, it's starting to get a little bit bigger. There's more overhead involved. There's, more issues that come up or whatever. But it's like that there's so many growing pains in that, like, not the very beginning, but kind of right after the beginning, before it's like you figure out and like find your stride of like, okay, I've got the team now, I've got the process, like this is what's gonna work. But it's that middle part that's so, that's I feel like it's the hardest, to like get over that hurdle and like find the stride that's like now we've got some momentum and it's going smoother.
I think listening to your podcast has been very helpful because it's like, okay, there is light. Just keep going, because it is that I do feel like I'm in that middle period right now.
It's a struggle, but knowing, it seems like you're very clear on what type of company and like what your purpose is, like what you want to do. And I feel like that's so helpful in terms of you have that criteria to make decisions based on. Versus, and that helps narrow down the options of, what you want to do and helps to know, is this working or is it not? Because you have that criteria of this is what a successful business, is that you want.
Totally. I agree. Thank you.
So what has been the best business decision you've made so far?
Oh, okay. Let me think about this. So I think the like one of the best business decisions I've made has been there's a collective, a group of women entrepreneurs. So I'm from Los Angeles, but I live in Atlanta. And Atlanta is now home for many, many years. And there's a group in the Southeast called the Southern Coterie. It's called the Southern Sea. And it's a group of women entrepreneurs from all types of creative and lifestyle fields. So you have apparel brands, you have you have interior designers, you have website and creative graphic designers, you have, I mean, jewelry designers, you've got coaches, you've got all kinds of women together, where it's, from women who are just starting out to women who have really, really, really been successful. And I joined this group at the beginning of this year and was able to go. They host a summit where they, bring everybody together and have amazing speakers and that to me, to joining that group has really been, I think, the best decision, best business decision I've made. from both an exposure perspective, from a networking perspective, from a learning perspective. It's really helped me to get the word out there, explore potential, like do different collaborations, and just also find an amazing community of women who've, even if they're, whether they're in apparel or not, who are either going through similar challenges that I am or have been through those challenges and have now kind of paved a path forward. So it's really brought a ton of incredible connections, both from a business perspective for me, as well as just a personal fulfilling perspective. And so I always encourage people, like, find a community, whatever that might be and look like for you. I pay monthly to be a part of this, and I would say it's well worth like the money I put towards it from what I've been able to get out of it. And it just opens up a lot of opportunities that I don't think I would have necessarily known about if I wasn't part of this community.
I love that. Yeah, community is so huge. I'm part of a couple of communities that sound kind of similar. And yeah, it's so fulfilling, and to have other people, like, hear how other people are doing it, bounce ideas off of them, just have like a group of people around you that know what it's like to kind of be in
Totally.
business. Yeah, so what are some of the like best or like insights or aha moments or like discussions that you've had with that group? Like anything stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, here, let me think about it. I think there were a number of things that were talked about at Summit that I think were really, really helpful. But I do remember one question that was asked. It was somebody who was, they're trying to get their business off the ground, but they have their day job and their career. And they asked one of the, there was a panel going on of women entrepreneurs who, had become very highly successful with their businesses. And the person in the audience asked something along the lines of, when do you know it's right to quit your day job? And I have a day job. And the person from the audience said, you'll know it's right when you can both pay somebody else's salary and your own salary. And that was something that was very helpful for me in terms of, okay, like, don't just like throw everything up in the air and quit your day job and focus solely on Casa Dono, even though you would love to do that. Like, be strategic, be thoughtful about this. Know that it's going to take some time, and that, like, make that big move when it's the right time to do it. And it sounds so simple. It's like, duh, right? Everybody would think that, but I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed when you're trying to balance, your regular job and starting a business and having a family. And so just hearing somebody else say that, I think, was such a good reminder and insight to me. Like, okay, you can do this. Other people have done it before. Just do it in a kind of a thoughtful, strategic way.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off of your growing your business, where you are able to then focus on what is the best long-term decisions for the business versus like, I need to pay my rent like
Totally.
in 2 weeks. What can I do to make cash? Like, it's like you need to make money to live, that and sustain your life, but then to put that pressure on the business can be really tricky and kind of take the joy out of it in some ways at the beginning when you aren't to that place where it's like, okay, this is a comfortable, sustainable, business that can pay for what I need to in my life. And so,
Absolutely.
yeah, like taking the pressure off. And there are plenty of founders and successful brand owners that, work a full-time or part-time
Yeah.
job or, waited years to quit their job and go full-time with the business for that reason.
Yeah, and I think also just hearing, like, and seeing and talking with women who are like, yeah, it took me like 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it might be. And knowing like, okay, like just because I'm in year whatever and I'm not, ready to quit my job, and because I can pay for somebody else and pay for myself, like that's okay. That's more likely how it works most of the time for most people. And I think, we tend to obviously like compare ourselves to others, and what we see through social media and hear about in stories or articles. And you tend to hear about like the ones who've been incredibly successful relatively quickly. But that's just not reality. So I think the reality check was very helpful for me.
Oh, good. Yeah, and like with those stories and stuff that you see in social media, it's always the monetary success that
Yes.
is highlighted versus not everybody's goal is to make as much money as possible as quickly as possible. Like sometimes it's a creative outlet, sometimes it's,
Totally.
like I have family members where it's like they work their day job and that's how they make money, and then they can have money to spend on their hobbies and interests outside of work. And they wouldn't want those interests to be their job, that's dependent on like feeding them. And yeah, so it's there's success far beyond just the money in the dollar signs, the revenue amount of the business too, that I think it's discounted a lot on social
I
media.
agree. I totally agree, Allison. And I love that. And I was having coffee with a friend who has her own kind of successful business. And I was, again, the importance of finding community and finding people that you can really be open with and connect with. And I was sharing with her, like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know what the next move is. Like, how do I move forward? And I've got all these things going on. And she asked me a really simple question that was so powerful to me. And she asked me, what would you do if you knew this business was going to fail? And I was like, whoa. And I was
That's a
like,
question.
that's a question. And my answer was, I donate everything to cancer patients. I would just donate all my inventory. And that would make me so happy. And I mean, it would, and she's like, well, there it goes. There it is. And which has, like, over the past week, because what I've been reflecting on is, that's, it may not be that I donate all my inventory, right? But that's where I should focus. I should focus on serving, potentially serving like that population, and focus on the donation aspect of my business, because that's what brings me joy. It doesn't mean that the business isn't gonna, also, bring money and profitability at some point. But if I can start there, maybe that is a good place, because I knew that if it were to fail, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I've never heard somebody ask that before, but I can see, like, I wouldn't have thought to ask it in that way, but that's a really, really interesting perspective on that of kind of what would you want to do if there wasn't this pressure to succeed? And it's like, okay, well, do that then.
Exactly.
So cool. Well, that is a brilliant question. I'm gonna have to think about that one.
I know.
So it seems like with Calcedonu, it has been like a very personal journey for you to like reconnect with yourself and find joy in this area. And I know even with the name too, that was a reference to, is it a Celtic goddess
The Celtic.
that, yeah, that you're researching, looking into your own heritage. So, but I want to know, like, has running this brand also helped you connect with others as well, or helped
Oh,
like
yeah.
your customers or other people connect with each other? And if so, how? Because it seems like a
Totally.
very, very personal brand in in how it's connecting you and the brand and then the people within it too.
Yeah, and Allison, I'm doing not expecting this, but like it started to make me cry a little bit.
Oh.
I think that that's been, I mean, one of the best things that's come out of it is I have been able to connect with women, you know, both women who are going through cancer, women who've survived cancer, but also just women who like they're get the garment and they put it on and they just say like, I feel amazing. Like I feel so fabulous. And I want to feel this way all the time. But I have been able to, like, I really take the connection with my customer as well as the women who I donate to very personally. And so a lot of times, you know, it will bring people together, and it will, you know, I'm a part of an organization called the Breasties, which is an organization for women impacted or anybody impacted by breast and gynecological cancers. And it's an incredible organization. I highly recommend that if you know somebody who may be impacted, that you check it out. It's what's really unique about them is there's so many young women who are part of it, which is surprising, but also it's hard to find community when you're really young and going through cancer. But they do something called Camp Breasty every year, and which they bring 600 women together and to a beautiful place up in Connecticut. And it's all about, you know, community connection, about learning about different things. They've got all kinds of panels. And I did a pop-up there this past June. And I, you know, for every garment sold, then the person who bought it could go find another. Everybody calls each other breasties. They could go find a breastie at camp and donate and give them a piece.
Oh,
And
that's
it was
so
the
cool.
most amazing thing. It was like I would have people coming back and being like, I brought my breastie. And the breastie who was getting the donation was just like, would be so overwhelmed and so grateful. And there'd be this beautiful connection. And it would be, you know, people who knew each other from before, but there were a lot of times it was just people that they had just met. And it was like, oh, I met this woman and she was telling me about her story. I want to donate to her. And so they would bring together and it would create this incredibly beautiful connection. There were a lot of tears that happened that
Yeah,
week.
I feel like
Obviously
that'd be
myself and
so,
everybody.
so much more meaningful than, than just being like, okay, I buy one and then one gets donated. But to actually like be able to say, I want to donate to this person and like have that one-on-one like relationship with that person, and go through it together and pick out your kimono, your caftan, or whatever piece it is together, I imagine it would just be such a bonding moment.
It was so beautiful to witness. And that's so, you know, I also, you know, I tell my customers, you know, if there is somebody in your life who you would like to donate to, like, let me know and we'll make that happen. And so I've been doing more and more of that too, because it is just this, you know, beautiful gift to be able to give somebody. And it's, you know, it's like that you're thinking about them and you want them to find and give them some joy and something to look forward to when they're going through this really hard time. So yeah, there has been a lot of connection. And that, you know, when I first started thinking about the brand, you know, building a community was really important to me, and it still is. And I'm trying to figure out the best ways to do that. But I think this is a core way that that's starting to happen.
I love that. That's a really cool story. Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
Yeah, I hope you get to experience more moments like that again in your brand. It sounds really cool. So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
alive. That I don't know if it's like core word or is like a core word is,
Whatever it is you want the clues to say.
I wanted to say just alive and fun and joy. I know those three words, but but just this idea of, I am enjoying every little minute of life. Because this is the life that we have. And I'm gonna wear what I want. I'm gonna feel amazing. I'm gonna feel beautiful. I'm not gonna be afraid to like embrace something that's more of a statement, that's something that's bolder. I'm just gonna kind of be the fullest expression of myself. That's what I hope my clothes help communicate, help kind of bring out in the women who wear them.
Love it. Well, this has been such a fun conversation, Kristen. Thank you for joining me. Where can people find out more about you and Shop Casa Danu online?
Yes. You can find me at Casa Danu on Instagram, or you can go to the website and shop the website at it's just casadanu.com, and that's Casa CASA and Danu DANU.
Perfect. I'll put links to those in the show notes. And thank you for joining me today.
No, thank you, Allison. I loved it.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter. Or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.